Well, good morning, everybody. Oh boy, my mic headphones are on kind of loud, aren't they?
So am I.
And I'll pull that back down, and how about there? That's a whole lot better, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. I should have done this before, but Gil wasn't at his station like he should have been, and it's all his fault.
Oh, it's okay, of course.
But I can blame him. It's okay. Gil's a big boy. 602-508-0960 if you have a car question or a car problem. My name is Mark Salem, and sitting next to me is Alan, my son, and Andy, my daughter. And between the three of us, we have 627 years of experience in car repair stuff. I think it's actually how many of years?
25.
So 45, and then my 100. So
typical.
Typical.
Well, you're probably, you would be my age because you started in 79, so it'd be 43.
Yeah, but I started in a gas station in 1968. Broadway show.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I worked at the Broadway show.
Okay, so just add 10 to Alan's age.
Yeah. Anyway, 602-508-0960, and you know we got a caller already, and Hector's called in at the beginning of the show, so we're going to honor him and take his question right out of the chute. Good morning, Hector. How can we help you?
Yes, sir. How you doing? By the way, I love your show, saving so much money throughout the years.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much for that.
Now, I called in last week on Saturday on a 2003 Toyota Corolla with a fuel. I changed the fuel filter and the fuel sock out of the fuel module. I took it apart from the back of the tank in the back seat. I did what you did. I did what you told me. I tested it, the fuel pressure, and it when I turned it on, it ran just fine. The pressure was between 44 and 50. But right when I turned it off, it just dropped like a rock. It went down, and when I tried to even depressurize it, press that little button on the gauge, nothing came out also. But I did it like 3-4 times. Right when I turned it off, it just dropped like a rock, close to like zero.
Oh.
Drain back valve. It's not holding it in the line.
Okay, but let me ask you this. When you go to start it, let's say you park it at the night, and the next morning you start it, does it start bingo, bingo, fast, or do you have to crank it a little while before it'll start?
I have to crank it a little while before I start, but if I turn it back off and I try to start again, it'll start pretty quickly. But if I leave it off for a while, it's a start.
Okay.
It takes a while. That's a hard start.
Okay, see, what happens is there's going to be a control on the pressure side of the fuel system, and when you throttle up, then what we do is we deadhead the rail. We deadhead the fuel delivery to all the injectors because we want full throttle, fuel delivery. So when you're shutting it off, you're losing all your fuel pressure. And the reason I ask you is how does it start? Because you have to reprime it to get it to start and run again. So you say you cycle the key on and then you turn it off and you turn it back on and it'll start. It's because the first cycle pressurized the fuel system. So the question then becomes is there's going to be, you called it a drain back valve, but it's kind of a generic thing.
Yeah, that's not
fuel pressure regulator, and the fuel pressure regulator isn't supposed to dump the fuel when you shut the key off. We're supposed to maintain fuel pressure for you so you don't have to crank the heck out of it on a cold start or if it sits there for a week. So when you, what did you find in the fuel tank? Did you find just the fuel pump?
The fuel pump, the pressure regulator, the pressure regulator and the sock of the filter.
Okay.
I took it apart.
You replaced all of that?
No, I did not. I only changed the filter and the sock. I didn't change the little pressure regulator or the pump itself.
Okay. The fuel pressure regulator would be my first concern. Now, I'd have to look at this because this car is as old as is some of my kids, this old 3 Corolla. Usually the fuel pressure regulator is underneath the hood, and usually it has a vacuum line to it. And usually on wide open throttle, when you lose vacuum, we deadhead the pump and say, give the injectors all the fuel that you can handle. So the real question is do we really have a check valve? If we have it, if it's called a check valve, then it's in the tank. And if that's the case, then that's... Have you seen this before?
Yeah. We replace all the time for this exact reason. There is a... It drains back. There's a... I can't think of the name of it right now, but it's almost like a rollover valve, but it's a one-way valve that keeps it from going back into the tank.
Okay.
To keep it pressurized. And,
Are you talking about Toyotas specifically or Chevy Ford
General.
Dodges?
Yeah, in general.
Okay.
Yeah.
In general. And it comes as a complete assembly
Yeah, it comes as an assembly. You don't just replace that part.
Okay. All right. So you might have to go back in the tank again. And I think what I would do is if there's a truly a check valve, and Alan's calling it a rollover valve, but we're talking about it could be the same thing, a check valve, a rollover valve, because we want to dump the pressure when the vehicle rolls over on its top, because the last thing we want it to do is to sit there and pump gasoline all over the people inside the car. So we got all these moving parts, and to be honest with you, I don't know that I've... I mean, this question is really something that I've not experienced in 10 years. Is the key off and all of a sudden we dump pressure. There might be a little bit of diagnostics that needs to be done. Let me ask you a question. All the lines inside the tank, any of them rubber or were they all steel?
Steel. Okay. They're all in good shape, yeah.
Okay. And this pressure regulator or whatever that you saw in the tank, it was just in the inlet line, the suction part of the pump? Was it that's where it was at or after the pump?
It was, you know what, it's a piece that goes onto the module, like it's close to the pump. I couldn't tell you if it was before or after, it's just right beside it.
Okay. You know, I don't know, I'll tell you, what part of town do you live in?
In Santan Valley.
Okay, I don't have anybody out there at all. I think with a little bit of research... And another thing I'd do is I'd probably call a couple of import parts stores or I'd call the Toyota dealership and I would say to them, I have two things in my car and you enumerate the name of those two things, which is the rollover valve or the fuel pressure regulator, and which one dumps fuel fastest. And I think the parts guys will probably be able to give you a good idea on which one you're at. For me and all of us here, we'd have to look at the fuel, we'd have to look at the schematic. And we'd have to determine what's electrical, what's vacuum, what's pressure, what's dump, all that kind of stuff, which is part of the diagnostic process. This is, on a 1 to 10 scale, this is a number 3 on difficulty. This isn't this big of a deal. It's just that it's you got an 03, and I don't have that in my hard drive. So, but
you that rollover valve? Is that in the fuel module?
Yeah, it's not the rollover valve. I just texted Eddie because I can't remember the name of it, but it's a check valve in the assembly. Okay. The rollover valve is separate.
Okay, but this is a fuel pressure regulator then. It has to be,
it's not the regulator. It's on the housing, the regulator's under the hood, it's on the housing, it's okay. A check valve, so when it basically, it's a one-way valve.
Okay.
It's a one-way valve. Okay. It's part of the housing assembly.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what I'll do, Hector. There's going to be people out there that know the answer to this, and they're going to tell me, and I need a way to get to you. So I want you to send an email to mark@marksalem.com and say, I'm Hector, and here's my phone number. Okay? mark@marksalem.com. And so when somebody sends me an email over the next 2 hours or in the next day, I'll forward that information to you. Is that okay?
That's fantastic. Thank you so much. Okay.
All right. Good luck to you. Thank you very much. It's going to be a bad day because the very first call stumped us.
Well, I think if that part comes with a complete assembly, then the only choice he's going to have is to replace the whole fuel pump assembly.
That's what the fix is.
In an 03, I mean, that's...
Yeah, and you know,
it's not going to be a bad choice regardless.
Yeah, and I guess we didn't ask him. I'm assuming he bought something from a parts store that was brand new, but he could have bought a rebuilt component somewhere from a parts store that had a rebuilt, or he could have bought a used one. We don't really know.
Yeah.
But that's okay. We'll go through it. 602-508-0960 if you have a car question or a car problem. We're good at answering complaints. Well, not complaints, but arguments between husbands and wives and mothers and fathers and sisters and brothers about who does this better and stuff. But one of the things I want to warn you about right now that's happening in our industry a lot is in the old days, we brought your car in every 3,000 miles for an oil change. And in the old days, we got to clip your hair. That was just one of the terminologies that hung around since the 60s. We got to clip your hair, give you a haircut on something. So every 3,000 miles, we could sell you a tire rotation. And then the next time you came in, we'd sell you an air filter. The next time you come in, we'd do a gas filter, so forth and so on. So today, we have synthetic oil. Synthetic oil goes between 10 and 15,000 miles. It's a premium oil. Shops don't necessarily call it synthetics. They just call it premium oil. The problem with that is they're putting a $3,000 call on your sticker.
3,000 miles.
3,000 mile return on your sticker, when really it should be 10 to 15,000 miles. So we've lost all this business. So all of you out there that drive 15,000 miles a year or less, you're really going to have one oil change a year. And it's okay. The oil can handle it. Your engine will handle it. But the sin is we're selling you a premium oil change that's going to be north of $100. And we're going to tell you to come back in 3,000 miles. We're going to deny you the ability to take advantage of that supreme oil, that superior oil, that synthetic oil for the long term.
Essentially, it's just a waste of money.
Yes. And you bring up a great point, because if you want to back up, you put in a conventional oil. What's our conventional oil 5-quart oil change about?
$45 to $50
is conventional. And so that's a 3,000-mile call? Are we using a 5 to 7 on the semi-synthetics?
No, that's good. We're not actually doing much of the conventional, but it's mostly the semi-synthetic. Okay. So that's going to be your low. Yeah.
And what's the call? What's the mileage on that typically going to be?
Probably 4,500, 5,000, like that.
Exactly. So you almost double. And most everybody doesn't come in exactly 5. So if they come in at 55 or 6,000, it's no big deal.
Yeah.
Okay. So we are struggling just even with our own shop with how are we going to communicate this to all of our customers, because there's a lot of them that are different than the others. We have people that do 3,000 miles a year, and that's all they do a year. And it's not, we could put conventional in that no matter what it is. Conventional oil, the cheaper oil, they don't need synthetic if they're driving 3,000 miles a year.
Yeah, most people, a lot of people don't even know what they're using.
Exactly.
They don't even know. You ask them, they want to know a price of the oil change. Well, the first question is, what kind of oil are you using? And they have no idea whether the weight, semi-synthetic, full synthetic, they don't have a clue.
Okay.
So most of the time you kind of, I will say, do you know how much you're paying for an oil change? Because if you can tell me that, I can probably give you a good idea of if you're using semi-synthetic or full synthetic at least.
Then let's do that right now real quick, okay? We got time. So I don't know what I have. Give me the parameters for conventional oil, which is called Fred Flintstone oil. It's the oil that we all grew up on.
Yeah.
Then semi-synthetic is semi-synthetic, and then full synthetic. So what's the dollars on conventional, semi-synthetic, and synthetic?
Conventional, I don't even... Honestly, we
were. I'll tell you the last time we did one.
Yeah.
But you see them advertised they're advertised all the time for $29.95 to $39.95 an oil change. So let's just use that as a conventional. What's the semi-synthetic?
So semi-synthetic, I would tell somebody between 40 and 60, 45 to 65, probably that range actually.
Okay.
Depending on how many quarts. And then a full synthetic, I would say between 80 to 100.
Okay. So that's, and then each one of those comes with a different miles driven in the middle.
Yeah.
Otherwise, miles of service.
Yeah, so a lot of times people will say, well, what's the difference? And, number one is what your manufacturer recommends. You need to know that.
Okay.
And we would find that out for you. And number two, semi-synthetic has a shorter oil change interval as opposed to a full synthetic. So essentially you're paying double, but you're getting kind of double the mileage for the full synthetic.
Right.
So.
And it's tough because you're trying to help them make a decision, but you don't really know a whole lot of what you do. Let me ask you this real quick. What do you do on your car?
I do a semi-synthetic.
Okay, and what's your oil change interval?
Probably 55 to 6,000.
Yeah. And so that gives you how many oil changes per year?
Probably two.
Two, okay. All
right. Yeah.
Okay, and that's really the mathematics of it all.
Yeah, and I mean, I think, too, it's knowing your customer, asking them, how much do you drive? How much, all of that, because if they're not driving a lot, then and they can use a semi-synthetic, that's what they should be doing.
Okay. Well, my truck is a good example. Is I'm doing 12 to 14,000 miles on a synthetic oil change, and I'm doing two of those a year sometimes. But that's okay with me because I don't want to come in every 3,000 miles for an oil change. So 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, and we'll be right back. Well, welcome back, everybody. 21 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. Mark Salem sitting here. Andy, my daughter. Alan, my son. We've all been in the car repair business for a very long time. And if you have any car questions about oil changes, about check engine lights, about engine codes, about diesels, Chevy, Ford, Dodge, that you can open up that door and we'll have more than enough callers about just that alone. Tires, suspension, lifting and lowering, what other kind of stuff that is something that's very popular on your
lighting.
End of the
What?
Lighting.
Yeah, a lot of lighting.
Okay, so you're talking about the LEDs. You're talking about lights on the roof, lights, backup lights, lights in the grill,
you're
all that kind of
stuff. About being able to see your truck from Mars.
Mars. Okay, fair enough. Oh, so what she's talking about right now is she's talking about you put lights on some of these off these guys' big hot dogs.
I put lights anywhere.
Anywhere.
Oh, yeah.
You put lights anywhere.
I will put lights wherever you want them because I love lighting. I don't know why I love lighting, but I just love lighting, and I'll put them anywhere.
And what
I'll
tape is there a brand that you specifically?
Yeah, Rigid. I mean, that's the only ones that we use. But yeah, just I don't know why. I just like to be able to see what I'm doing. I don't know.
The vehicles that leave the shop with a lighting package from Allen is basically a big circle of big, huge LED lights, and it looks like some kind of a spacecraft moving down the highway.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Essentially.
Mm-hmm. And they like that.
Oh, yeah. We do a lot of lights.
How many wives like that?
I have no idea. Well, I don't answer to their wives. I answer to them.
Okay.
I don't even answer to my own wife.
Their wives probably don't know.
602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. If you have a car question, we do work on diesels. We do lighting. We do lifts. We do tires. We do wheels. We do all that kinds of stuff. We also have a mechanical side that Andy kind of runs, and that's oil changes to engine replacements and everything in between, including check engine lights, which is always a big portion of any repair shop's business, is the check engine light come on. There's a code. The guy at AutoZone says to do this or do that or whatever. And those are the kinds of things from bumper to bumper that we kind of do. Action Auto Repair is another shop. He's up at I-17 in Deer Valley. He knows what he's doing as well. Tom's been around since 1983, and I've known him since just before 1983. He has ASE Master Certified Technicians. He knows the difference between right and wrong, and his staff understands that Tom has certain parameters that you don't cross, and that is don't sell something and hope it's going to fix the car, because we're going to end up eating that job when the customer comes back and says, hey, it's still doing it. So make sure you're going to take care of the customer's symptom before you bid the job. And Tom's a good guy for that. He is he watches his staff closely. Another guy that's on the other side of the world, which is Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing, he's on Main Street just east of Stapley, and Brian and Thelma came, both of them, they're married now and have been for years, but both of them came from gas station families from the 60s in Mesa. So their families had Shell stations and Union 76 stations and stuff like that. So they came from that area, at that area of time. But if you're in Mesa, the only shop I can tell you to go to that I know does good work and I know is going to be around to take care of any warranty issues you have and I know that it has really good technicians is Thompson's Auto Repair, and they're located on Main Street just east of Stapley Drive. Either one of you have any really good car stories, like somebody comes in, their car's stinking, and there's a dead skunk in the trunk or anything like that?
No, we had a guy the other day tell us that he bought a part at, it wasn't Checker, it wasn't AutoZone, it was the Irish AutoZone. What's the Irish AutoZone?
I don't know, just move on. Who cares where it came from?
That's part of the joke, you just missed the joke.
I'm scared to death you're going to say something. I'm going to get in trouble for it.
No, the Irish AutoZone. O'Reilly's?
Yeah.
He called it the Irish AutoZone. Customer did. About fell out of my chair.
Okay. What does that have to do with the question on the table?
Nothing. It was funny.
Irish AutoZone.
He called it the Irish AutoZone. He couldn't remember the names. He called it the Irish AutoZone.
We all knew exactly what he meant right when he said it.
Oh, so this is a front counter and a deal. Okay.
Yeah.
So the whole staff is on the floor laughing?
Yeah. Pretty much.
Okay. And we do a lot of that, and we're happy to do that kind of stuff. It's really a matter of we're not going to be able to walk you through and fix your car over the telephone, but we can give you some advice on where to go next. Keep in mind, we're based on what you're telling us about your testing procedures. So if you say you have fuel pressure and we tell you to go left and that doesn't fix it, it's because you think you had fuel pressure and you really didn't, and we should have told you to go right. But we're not in the business of telling you how to fix your car anyway. But in the event, you can also go to MarkSalem.com, and we have FAQs that have a whole lot of information about all the repairs that we've done since we've been in business, since 1994. or even before that. So we're in our existing facility since 1994, but I've been working on cars since 1968 in Tempe. And that's where I went to high school, as a matter of fact, is Tempe High. And so I've been around a while. And I'm also a master technician, and I've had that blessing. And I'm not sure if that is a blessing, but it typically is one. So one of the things that I think bothers most people is they just don't understand some of the lights that are on their dash. Mm-hmm. And they don't understand ABS or traction control or stability control and stuff like that. I think the easy part for me is if it's red, stop. If it's yellow, you can continue to drive. That's it. It really kind of boils down. But it's also important, there's a lot of folks just don't understand what can happen when the needle gets into the red.
Mm-hmm.
And when the needle gets into the red, you're going to get towed in and you're going to get a really big bill. Would you agree?
Yeah, I would say, I mean, we hear a lot, you know, it was running hot and I was only a mile from home, so I just drove it home.
2 minutes.
And it's like, that's the worst thing you can do. I mean, a tow bill at that point, if you're a mile from home, has got to be $50-$60.
Right.
It's, you know, between that or an engine running it hot, so.
So you lift the hood and the motor's a big melted, molten metal mm-hmm. of thing, and you go, I think there's a little bit more than 3 or 4 miles on this motor, but the motor's trash.
Yeah.
And we see that a couple of times a year.
Yeah.
We see them a couple of times a year.
Or they don't fix coolant leaks, and then forget about them and then overheat the engine.
When was the last time we had somebody come in with an engine that had sustained damage because it didn't have any oil in it and nobody pulled a dipstick in it in 10,000 miles or anything like that? Because they still have a responsibility to do that. Although some of the newer model cars and a lot of the newer model cars have an oil level issue and stuff like that that will tell them.
Oh, oil light. Yeah. I don't think we've seen it probably in the last year.
And I think what I'm driving at is most of the time at the very beginning of the end, there's lots of clatter and there's lots of noise and there's a loss of power and your throttle, you're giving it gas and it's not going anywhere. Most people will shut down at that point.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the person that is 2 miles from home and pushes it to where it just smokes the motor.
I think we see more of the check engine light come on and people come in for the check engine light and we find that they're way overdue on their oil change, and it's throwing check engine light codes because it's so low on oil.
It's really big on the new variable valve timing cars because those are run on oil. So when you run it low, then they start running like crap, and then you throw check engine lights.
And that's hard because you're telling somebody, I'm going to change your oil and filter and fix it the running rough. And that's a hard transition for people mm-hmm. to understand. So when you say to them, all I need to do is an oil change and I'm going to fix your problem, they better trust you. And mm-hmm. and it's true that we do that, and we probably do it as much as anybody else. Mm-hmm. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour, 10 o'clock, Mark Salem, Andy, my daughter, runs the shop and at runs the money, keeps it away from my son Alan, who sits next to me, and he runs the shop. And between all of us, we have well over 100 years of experience in the car repair business. And so you're welcome to call us, and we're gonna go straight to the phones and clean up some of the messes that I make. But Dan, you've been waiting a while. I'm sorry about that. How can I help you?
Okie dokie. Hi. You guys were talking about the car lights.
Yes.
Neon or whatever the heck they are. One, is it legal to turn the lights on while the car is running, driving?
It depends. Off-road lights, no. But we install a whole heck of a lot of SAE and DOT approved lights as well. I push people towards the DOT and SAE lights because if you're going to spend $500 or $1,000 on lights, I'd rather you use them all the time, be able to use them all the time. But I think I know where you're going with this, and there's off-road and then there's on-road.
Well, and are you thinking we do lots of off-road lights, but the lights that we do that people are going to use at nighttime are lights that are going to supplement the front headlights. You're not allowed to have more than 4 white lights to the front. So you can't put high beams, and then 6 lights across the front because you're going to get in trouble for that. We don't put any white on the side of a car unless they're going to use them off road, and we do backup lights and they're white, but again, it's going to be only when the car is in reverse.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like we're going to drive down the street in a Christmas tree, but we're pretty careful about. And then also, there's a height requirement. We can't put we put a light bar up on top of the cab of the truck till we have like 180 degrees of white light that goes a mile. Well, that's for off-road activity. He should not be driving down the street, you know, on I-17 with that light bar on.
Highly illegal.
Yeah,
and that's going to get somebody in a whole lot of trouble, but not the people that installed it. It's the people who were messing with the switch and turned it on. Most of the switches that we have a light that tells you the switch is on.
Yeah.
And so you flip it on and it's got red, you flip it off and the light goes dead. So that's how it did. That answer your questions?
Are you there?
Dan, we're having a tough time hearing you.
How about now?
Oh, yeah, there you go.
There you go, there you go.
Okay. The kid's got a 2016 Mustang. He wants colored lights on the headlights and colored lights along the side and bottom.
No.
Is that street legal?
No. Highly illegal.
Okay.
I mean, here's why. The lights in the front of the car have to be between the color of orange and white. And the lights in the back of the car have to be between the colors of red and red. That's it. Red and orange.
Red and orange. I know what he wants.
We were also told on that Mustang that they have to remove the headlight and lens to put those inside.
Yes, you do.
That's a no-no.
Yes, you do, and yes, it is. That's a very expensive thing. They never seal up right, no matter what anyone tells you. They don't seal back up right. I know what you're talking about. They're called halos. You add them to them. A lot of people do it, but any color other than white or amber to the front is highly illegal and a really good way to get pulled over.
There's probably some middle ground that you can touch with your son, but anything, like we said, outside the color of the front just gives the police department an opportunity to stop your son.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, if he smells a little bit, it's a bad thing.
These kids just want to spend money to park the car and turn the lights on.
Well, yes. They're not alone. I have plenty of customers that do the same thing.
And he does that.
That is an option. That is absolutely an option. You can put them on. You just can't run them on the road. So, yeah, if he wants to sit in the parking lot and check them out and show his friends all the green lights, that's okay.
And if that's happening, we're raising our hands on that one. But I'm teasing you.
For that price, I could buy a couple tanks of gas.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's really something. I think it would be that the switch that turns those on is going to be very obvious to the driver at that time. So he's driving down the road, and if that switch accidentally goes on, then he knows that those headlights are illegal. He has to shut them off. There's lots of ways that we can accommodate his wishes, where when he wants to sit with his buddies in the parking lot of a shopping center at night and have their halos running, then we can do that. Okay?
Thanks. Yep, you bet. Thanks, guys.
You bet. Right. Renee, you're up next. How can I help you?
Well, I've got a quick question. Can you hear me? I've been listening to your program this morning. I am the taking care of our car now, and I thought your oil change information was very interesting. Can you switch from one kind to the other each
one
time
minute.
You go in to have, like, if we're going to drive a minimum amount, but then next year we're going to travel, we would change to the other? Does it start from scratch every time you bring it in?
The answer is your engine doesn't care and doesn't know whether we put an oil that's $20 a quart or an oil that's $1 a quart. The engine doesn't know that. The oil change interval is going to be moved with the quality of the oil. So to answer your question, yes.
Empties and starts from scratch when you do the change.
Yeah. That's no problem at all.
All right. And I'm learning. So that's all. That's it. And
okay.
You answered it. And I appreciate your show very much. Thank you.
Go ahead.
Okay. Hold on that, because there's been numerous times in the last 6 months where we have had Chrysler vehicles with the wrong weight of oil in it that have had engine noises, check engine lights, and there is an actual light on the dash for Chrysler vehicles that say wrong weight or wrong grade of oil.
Okay. But she's not talking about the weight. She's talking about a conventional, a semi-synthetic, and a synthetic. I'm assuming that if it calls for a 1540, or if it calls for a 1030, or if it calls for a 0530, then I'm assuming that everybody's going to use the right weight.
Yeah. Yeah, and if you get to a 020, you're not going to find a 020 conventional, or
okay.
You're not going to find even a 020 semi-synthetic. So, there are... Follow what's on the cap of the vehicle.
Okay. So what we're talking about a variety of things. We're talking about brands. We're talking about viscosity, and then we're also talking about oil quality. So we have those three variables that are moving around. But if she just does the oil weight that's on the cap of the oil on the engine, she should be fine whether she uses a conventional, a semi-synthetic, or a synthetic. She should.
Yes, but if, like I said, if it's a 0-20, she's not going to find anything but a synthetic.
Okay.
So all then right. she won't have a choice.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Anyway, good luck. Thank you, Renee. That's great. And we're going to take a break. And when we come back, Art, you're going to be our first caller. And anybody else, the lines are open. We have four of them, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Art, thank you for holding. How can I help you?
Thank you, Mark. Thanks for taking the call. Okay, let me give profile of the car real quick so you have context. 2006 Chrysler Pacifica, front-wheel drive, 3.5-liter, 4-speed automatic with auto stick, and about 140,000 miles. We've owned the car over 15 years.
Okay.
Here's the issue. Driving down the road from a dead stop, somewhere between 30 and 40 miles an hour, the car will all of a sudden make a very slight pull to the right, which then can only be offset by holding the steering wheel about 10 degrees left of noon. And then it holds steady. And it won't kind of right itself until you come back to a complete stop.
Okay.
And the other observation I've been able to make is I had access to a rack, so I put the car up on a rack. The wheels don't have bearing play. I reached underneath, and while there's a little bit of suspension noise, nothing was obviously loose, no missing bushings. Things seemed fairly tight underneath. There is weeping out of the transaxle pan, but it's down probably less than a half a pint. And the other thing I observed, and I don't know if this is common with front-wheel drive cars of that era, while on the rack, in park, with the key out in lock, I can actually rotate the front wheels.
That's normal.
But if I have the car on the ground, well, that is normal. Yeah, I can't push the car if it's on the ground.
Well,
but if it's up in the air, I was able to rotate the tire. So that's all I know.
Yeah, with the car's on the ground, the car's not going to move because one tire wants to go forward and one tire wants to go backwards, and the car's not going to go anywhere. I can't fix your car. You have given me symptoms I've never heard before. Don't misunderstand. What part of town do you live in?
Sun City West.
Okay. I'd either take it to Harker's or Auto Dynamics. I would make an appointment and ask them if you can take one of their main technicians for a quick drive. Promise them you're not going to have them for longer than X amount of minutes. Tell them you'll pay for it. We can't fix your car. We're all sitting here dumbfounded because you're giving us symptoms that we've really put together. We've never heard before, but I can tell you, Harker's has got guys, 38th Avenue and Indian School, Auto Dynamics has got guys, they're senior guys. They're going to want to sit in the passenger seat and have you show them what to do and have you demonstrate the problem. But what it sounds like to me is something's going on that's causing the right front tire to take a dominant position and kick outwards. It could be the rack and pinion boots or rack and pinion mounts are bad. It can be a suspension shift. It can be a tie rod end that's bad. There's so many things it can be, but driving it is the very first thing that needs to happen. And you need a gray-haired guy that's a master tech that you show him, and then he wants to drive. That's the best I can offer you. But you've given me symptoms. I've been in radio since 1988, and
it's
never...
It's a different problem, for sure.
It's yeah. And it could be steering. It could be suspension. But it's not going to be engine. You're exactly right.
Because, I mean, it could be... But the weird part is it starts at 30 or 40.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
A pull is either always there or it's not there.
Right.
You know, it doesn't just come on at 30. I don't... That's the part for me that maybe you notice it less prior to 30, but... Pulls are typically always there.
The steering wheel's at noon, like you straighten the wheel, the steering wheel's at noon, you can let go of it, it'll go straight down a straight road, and then if you let your hands off the wheel, somewhere between 30 and 40, which, by the way, is not related to a gear shift. I thought for sure it was pulling when it went into third gear.
Okay.
So I used auto stick, and I held it in second gear, and when I hit somewhere between 32 and 38, it just jogged over to the right, and that was it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll have all the answers once we figure out what's going on. Yeah. But suspension shift, some kind of steering component. Steering and suspension is where I'm going to hang my hat.
Tire.
Across
the two fronts.
And that's exactly good. Thank you for that. And that's one of the things that you would try. But what on a tire would cause that to come and go like that?
Well, again, it may just not be as noticeable until 30. You could easily see that with a tire, okay, where all of a sudden at 30, for whatever reason, I have no idea, that at 30 it begins to pull or...
But I like the idea that we swap the front tires because that helps eliminate some stuff,
right,
as well.
Right.
We eliminate,
mm-hmm,
two wheels and two tires, or we rotate the backs to the front and it goes away. We're done that point.
I mean, if he does that, he just needs to obviously do it in steps so that way, you know, don't rotate front to the back, or, you know, do it one at a time.
Art, I'd like it very much if my email address is mark@marksalem.com. If you figure this out or have somebody figure it out, I'd really love to if you'd send me an email and tell me what fixed the car, because you gave me a question I've never heard before. And I trust that you're telling me the truth. I know you are. It's just that I have no idea. I got to run, though. Ken, you're up next. Ken, how can I help you?
Good morning. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, sir.
Very good. Okay, I have a 2005 Acura TL with 167,000 miles on it. It's actually my wife's car, so I had it back into trying to help her with the problem. We're in park, or we're at a stop sign or a stoplight. The car's got a very bad vibration. Vibration meaning steering wheel, the whole cabin, the whole car ostensibly shakes, not like rattles you, but you can tell it's not right. When I put the shifter in neutral, the vibration totally goes away. When I'm in neutral and I gently rev the engine, there's no vibration.
We got it fixed. It needs a mount.
So before, what got us to this point was that my wife claimed, I didn't drive it, that it was lurching. Unfortunately, we took it to a garage and they replaced all the motor mounts. Come to find out that made no difference. And now they thought maybe, so I went back and told them, hey guys, when it's in drive, when it's stoplight, red light in drive, it vibrates. So I put it in neutral, it goes away. To me, to somebody that knows what they're talking about, what does that tell us?
Well, it tells us you're in big trouble. That's what it tells us. That we can't fix this problem. Your symptoms, 99% of the people that come in with bad motor mounts, and it doesn't mean all of them. At 160,000, I would have tried to talk you into all three of them myself. But it's called the load mount. It's the mount that the motor rolls over on, that mount, when you accelerate and go forward and drive. That's the load mount. You talk about a vibration that comes and goes, and it depends on what gear you're in, and it depends on how hard you're on the throttle. It's a damn motor mount. That's all there is to it. Now, in order to figure out what's going on, you got to fix the new problem you got, and it could be related to the installation, it could be related to a wrong part, it could be related to an alignment that was done wrong. There are so many different things that can be going on, but what you're in is you're in big trouble. So let me explain. I'd like you to go back to them, get a hold of the manager, take him for a ride, and show him exactly what they gave you. Show them exactly what they gave you. Make sure in a nice way you say to him, don't spend any of my money unless you call me. And let them have a chance. If they can't do it or won't do it, then take it to another shop and do the same thing and pay for the repair. Look them in the eye and say, you need to make sure that this is going to take care of this. After you pay for the repair, you ask for all your old parts back. Then you go back up to the first shop and say, here's the deal. If he says go fly a kite, then just turn it over to your credit card company and see what they'll do. That's how you handle it.
Got it. Now, the fact that I put it in neutral and the vibration totally goes away, is that indicative of your prognosis?
Yes.
Yes, the
matter.
Yeah,
100%.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, here's the deal. Go from reverse to neutral to drive to neutral to reverse. And the only time you're going to have this noise or vibration is in drive.
How many mounts did they do? I mean, is it possible? We've seen we've seen people miss mounts because that's a transverse engine. So you actually have engine and trans mounts. So any of those, now you're going to have obviously more susceptible, but any of those can do it. If they missed a mount, and I know that sounds silly at a shop, but trust me, we've seen it.
We've done it.
Yeah, we've done it.
No question.
I know, too, some are particular on the mounts that are like aftermarket versus OEM and stuff like that. So we've run into those issues, too, depending on what they use.
Do you know how many they did just off your head? 3, 2, 1, 4?
Yeah, I know exactly what they did because I have my...
How many did they do? How many?
They said they did all of them, transmission and motor mount. The answer was 6.
Okay.
6?
I've never seen six in my life.
I've never seen 6 either.
4 is the most I've seen.
Yeah. 2 in the engine, 2 in the tranny.
I can't explain how the shop says they've done 6. I can't explain that. But like I said, from the very beginning of this story, you are in trouble. You are in trouble, and you're going to have... First of all, you should focus on getting the car fixed. And once you get the car fixed, then you'll have the answers about who's responsible or who didn't do their job or who did whatever. And the information you're giving us is just way out in Never Never Land.
I would go back to the shop that originally did the mounts first and just... ride with them, ask them to get involved and see if they can fix it, if they can pinpoint what mount it is and maybe replace it or something like
that. And maybe they're a specialty shop where this isn't their specialty, and you say to them, well, do you have a shop in the neighborhood that you... Oh, yeah, Joe down the street. He's great. You go talk to Joe, and I'll call him and say, hey, take a ride with this customer and see if you can help us out. That's kind of what you're looking for. Mm-hmm. But don't involve a whole bunch of other people because you're going to lose that battle.
Yeah,
you're
going to
get shops pointing at one another, yelling at one another, and stuff like that. You'll lose that battle. Anyway, got to run. Chuck, you're up next. Chuck, how can I help you?
Hey, Mark. I've got a utility trailer, 6x12, 5,000-pound capacity. And I've been putting trailer tires on it. Seems like I get about 5 or 6 years out of them, and the rubber starts blowing off the tire. I'm wondering, should I put a passenger tire on it instead?
Yes.
Because I've never had a problem with passenger tires.
Absolutely. Okay, couple things. If you're getting 5 or 6 years out of trailer tires, you are way ahead of the game.
Yeah, you're lucky.
Yes. 5 or 6 on a trailer tire.
Yeah, but I only put about 1,000 miles a year on it.
It doesn't matter. Sitting's actually the worst thing for it.
It rots by itself.
Yeah.
It'll rot in sitting in your driveway.
But the answer to your question is, now, one thing you need to be careful of, even if they're the same size between passenger and trailer, they're going to have different load indexes and different load ratings. So a passenger tire may have 1,800 pounds and a trailer tire has 2,000 pounds. So you need to be careful of that. Because they're the same size doesn't mean they hold the same amount of weight.
Okay. You said it's a 5,000-pound trailer. How many tires has it got on it? 4?
Just 2.
Two. So each tire has to hold 2,500 pounds. Go to Discount Tire. Say to Discount Tire, I want a tire that has a 2,500-pound weight load on it, and I want 2 passenger car tires. They start with a P, and I want them on that trailer. That's what you do. Because we have to have 5,000 pounds of tires underneath the trailer that's going to hold 5,000 pounds. That's what it's all about.
Now, I will tell you this, too. There is times we run into it where this is not possible. There isn't a passenger tire that will hold that much. I can't think of a passenger tire off the top of my head in a 15 or 16 that holds 2,500 pounds. That's a lot of weight. You know, you get 14, 16, 1,800 pounds. So if they tell you it's not possible, do your own research. But I have run into it before it's just not possible.
And if that's the case, you can go to a light truck tire, LT.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And even at that point, too, again, it's probably 20%, but there is some that you just can't do.
Okay. Anyway, Chuck, that's the best we can do for you. But again, if you figure this out, we'd like to know the answer. And if you found a 2,500-pound passenger car tire, and if you can, fine. And if you can't, then Alan's right. We're gonna have to move you up to a light truck tire. It's called an LT tire. But that's okay. It's going to give you better service, but you need to have as much tire underneath the trailer's going to hold. And we see them all the time where we've got people with 2-axle trailers, and they got 2,000 pounds of tires underneath the trailer with a 4,000-pound load. It can't happen. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. We'll be back with another hour of fun and frivolity right here on KKNT 960. Alrighty. Well, we had some technical issues here at the shop. It's 5 minutes after 11. And do we have any callers?
We have Tony.
Tony, good morning. How can we help you?
Hey there, Mark. How are you doing today?
Good.
I'm calling about my 97 Explorer. I had a somewhat of an accident issue. A woman rammed the front of my vehicle and pulled the bumper back out and up. It's still there. I mean, it's not going to fall off or anything. I'm just asking, you know, what am I going to have to do? Who do I need to go to get the bumper put back? I mean, the bumper's straight. It's just pulled up. You know, how can I get that fixed?
Well, whose fault is the accident?
It was hers.
Okay.
She took off. I never found her or got her license plate number.
Okay. Are you going to report this to your own insurance company?
Well, it's just, I really don't want to spend money on the insurance. You know what I'm saying? I want to find out the cheapest way I can fix this thing. I mean, I know the bumper has different points, you know, that holds on there. And I haven't, you know, I'm sick right now. I can't get under there and look at it.
Okay.
The whole thing.
I think what you should start to do, I think what's beneficial for you is to just educate yourself about what you're faced with, and I would take it to two or three body shops, and I would just have them write a ticket for the repair. I think it's entirely possible that some of them are going to fix this while the other guys want to replace that. And if the bumper cover is damaged, so we're going to have to put a new bumper cover on it. But the superstructure is still good. So there's going to be all these different moving parts. I think you'll be best educated if you turn around and if you just have two or three body shops bid the work. And then I think you'll have a much better handle on what to do. I don't think you're capable, and I'm certainly not capable, of telling you what needs to be done, because you're going to have to take it apart to find out what's bent, what's broken, and what needs to be replaced. So the bumper is hung onto the frame with two bumper shocks, and if those are damaged, then we start there. If the superstructure, which is the metal part underneath all the plastic, if it's damaged, it needs to be replaced. But some of that stuff can be done in a used arena. You can go to a wrecking yard and find a car like yours, and it might be 3 years older or newer, and you can buy the entire front bumper. You can buy the shocks and the superstructure and then the cover, and then somebody just has to paint it. So I think you have a lot available to you. You just have to go out and talk to two or three body shops and have them bid the work.
Also, I'm going to have to replace the grill.
Okay.
On the front.
It's the same thing. It's all going to be, it's all, and then you're going to have the option probably at a lot of parts, at body shops, of used parts versus new parts. And what they're going to really hope for is they're going to find a car that was hit in the back that has a good front end on it. And so then your body shop's going to buy everything on the front and just put it on yours and paint the bumper. So I can't really. I can't.
Thank you, sir.
Okay. Well, good luck to you, Tony. Good luck to you. Anyway, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. If you have a car question or a car problem, you're welcome to give us a call. You'll oftentimes find in the auto repair industry that there's going to be some widely varying opinions about things like which oil brand to put in and whether you deviate from this, what your owner's manual says, and all that kind of stuff. And our industry is permeated with people who have different ideas, and I'm one of them. The idea is what's really best for you. And a lot of times that discussion involves a direction of you wanting to go that really doesn't, that we've seen perhaps, and we don't think you should go there, because most people that go that direction don't win, and they don't end up where they want to be. So with respect to, like, Tony, I think he's got a good chance of being able to find some parts off of a wrecked car that wasn't hit in the front and have those reinstalled on his. And again, all he has to do is paint the bumper. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. The off the cuff behind the scenes where Alan and Andy and I are talking about this, and the oil came up again, and we all agree that you should use the viscosity that the engine manufacturer says. Mm-hmm. But then we also have at that point, we've got the old guys that say, when I start drinking oil, why can't I go to a 30 weight? So then what do you say? When my motor gets too old and tired, and I'm leaking oil, and I don't want to put a $10 a quart synthetic in my truck, I want to put a 30 weight in my truck or my car or whatever, then what do you say?
I don't know for the newer stuff how it would affect it.
Yeah. I think as the motor wears older and older, and you've got cars out there with 100 and 200 and 300,000 miles, it's my opinion that the motors, as it gets older, it gets looser, and the idea of having a 0-20 in there is not nearly as attractive, especially if you've got oil leaks or it's consuming oil, to go to something with a higher viscosity, something that will help control the oil consumption or the oil leaking by going to a 30 weight, a 10-30, a 10-40, whatever. So those are the kinds of things that we have. Mm-hmm. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. I'll tell you about a couple of shops in town. We've talked about a couple of already. Larry Harker's Auto is at 38th Avenue and Indian School. He's a good shop, been around a long time. Bob and Ellen run it, and Bob runs the shop, and Ellen runs the front counter. They've been married a very long time, but more important, they've been in the auto repair industry since 1967. So Bob and his staff are well-versed on the older cars as well as the newer cars. And it's a shop that I send people to oftentimes in that geographical area just because it's really, really a good shop, and they do a good job. And I've got plenty of stories about them being the heroes. Somebody came in and was told that they needed something very expensive, and Bob says, no, that's not it. And then actually the bill was one-tenth of what the estimate was on the first time, and the customer pronounced the car fixed. That happens a lot. When it gets to diesels, we've got diesels, strictly diesel, and he's up on I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. Nate's a good guy. He knows diesels. He works on the Dodge, the Chevy, and the Ford. So he's well-versed in diesels. He also has a website with parts on the website. So if you wanted to add some parts to enhance the power or the performance, or you want to change the air cleaners, you want to change the air filters, you want to do any kind of stuff, exhaust, you can talk to Nate, and he'll actually call you back. So if you call the shop and you say, I have a question about my 6-liter, my 6.4, my 6.7, or whatever, Nate will call you back. So he handles that north area just fine, I-17 and Pinnacle Peak, and that's at Nate at Strictly Diesel Service and Repair. And I've known Nate a long time, and we got a caller. Who might that be?
Say good morning to David.
David, good morning.
Good morning, Mark. I have a 2012 Prius with about 130,000 miles on it. The manual had said that the transmission fluid, CVT style, I believe, is lifetime. I went ahead and changed it out, and I put a Castrol Transmax CVT in it. Though things I'm reading are saying, well, you should only use the Toyota WS. Should I drop it and put the Toyota fluid in, or am I okay?
Well, Toyota probably doesn't make their own fluid anyway.
I think it's a place called Idemitsu who makes the transmissions. They have formulated the fluid.
But they're not making the fluid. You see, there's nobody out there that's going to open up an oil refinery to make a fluid for one transmission. What they're going to do is they're going to find out all the different fluids, and somebody's going to make it. This is a problem that we have and this happens in my world every minute of every day. And it's when you get on the internet and you get 20 people talking about something, and they all swear that they know and talk to the Lord about it and have seen it written in writing and stuff. And that just drives me crazy. There's only four companies in the world that make spark plugs, yet everybody says Champion is better than Autolite. You know what I mean? There's four companies. 90% of the front-wheel drive axles are made in China, and they're put in boxes with more than 300 labels. I'm talking to guys that go buy, and they take an axle to China, find this guy who's making axles, and have him bid them, and we want you to make 800 of these for us. And we're going to put them in a Salem box as opposed to a Jones box. So I'm not a real fan of the discussion about this is better than that. If the performance of your car is acceptable to you, then I can't imagine why you wouldn't just continue on. I can't imagine why you'd drain the oil out and start over, because you got a 50-50 chance of taking a step backwards by doing that. But if you're happy with the shifting and the power and the performance of your Prius, just leave it alone. And it's got a CVT transfer in it, and the fluid is identified as a CVT transmission fluid, yes?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think you're scared because of what you read on the internet, but I want to tell you something. I spend a lot of my time on the internet, and I just hate that time in my life, because I've got people out there that are saying things that just aren't true and have never been true. Never been true.
I think you're just going to find it.
Let me ask you this. So the idea, though, that they are, Toyota and some other brands, are telling you that it's lifetime. What do you think of that concept?
Well, I'm concerned about the lifetime, because lifetime is a big, broad set of hands that are spread real wide, and I'm quite sure that Alan drives his Dodge truck and Mark drives his Dodge truck in a 1 to 10 scale. Our trucks are in the 8 to 9 range of being abused. Okay, we work them hard. We haul big trailers. We haul big loads. We do lots of stuff with our trucks. And then we've got Grandpa Moses, who has the same truck, and he only puts 6,000 miles a year, and the heaviest thing he's had in the bed is a gallon can of gas for his lawnmower.
I'll tell you, too, with CVT, we've seen so many issues and so many problems. There's no repairing those. The lifetime on a CVT is probably only 150,000 miles. I mean, we're seeing them way less than that. But yeah, I don't. I'm not a tranny guy, so we don't. I don't know a lot about the whole lifetime stuff. But that.
I think too, if it says it's compatible and it's a CVT transmission fluid, you're fine. I think on the internet you're going to find things both ways. I mean, you can find, you know, somebody that says it's right, somebody that says it's wrong, some, you know, all of that. So it's.
There's only four companies that pull oil out of the ground. Mobil, Shell, Chevron.
Exxon?
Exxon, I think, is one. Anyway, I'm in the wrong studio, because in the other studio I have a piece of paper sitting on my thing. But there's only four basic companies that make oil. And if you walk into an AutoZone or an O'Reilly's, they could have 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 different brands of oil. And unfortunately, they're pretty much all the same. So you can shop price, you can do whatever you want. But I just think you should, if you're in a good place right now, then I don't think you should change it. And I don't think you should believe those four people on the internet that are telling you of whatever. This is just something it's permeated our industry in the worst way. We have all these people on the internet that want to chime in, and then when you question them in a nice way, they can't answer. How do you get this experience? What do you do for a living? Well, I drive a cab, and I don't mean to demean cab drivers. I drive a cab, or I'm a brain surgeon. I don't care what your answer is. Do you have 40 years of experience in working on cars? Let me ask you two questions. When was the last time that we had a transmission come in and we diagnosed the transmission being defective because it had the wrong fluid in it? Have you ever seen it?
No.
No.
Ever?
No.
Okay. When was the last time you had a motor that came in and the motor was trashed, the motor had blown up, the motor had given up the ghost, the motor was no longer useful, and anybody could tie it to the kind of oil that was used in the car?
Never.
Okay. Of all the motors that we replace, why do we replace the motors? What's the common denominator for a motor we fix?
Overheat.
Lack of lubrication.
Yeah.
So low on oil.
Yeah.
Or on overheat.
Yeah.
So is 99% of the motors that we replace fall into one of those two categories?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
When was the last time either one of us, and we process, I don't know how many cars a day, do you have any idea?
Probably 25, 30, something like that.
25, 30 cars a day. We have 20 bays. Where we're at is not important. The idea is we see lots of cars. We have all of this stuff going on, even with nitrogen in the tires. That's just ballooned into something really big now, mm-hmm. where people are saying nitrogen is bad for your tires. Well, there's a tremendous amount of nitrogen in the palm of your hand right now.
Mm-hmm.
So how can nitrogen be bad for your tires? So we have all of these moving parts, and it's just a difficult thing. Virtually every motor we replace has been damaged by the person driving it. They ran it low on oil, or they overheated the hell out of it.
Mm-hmm.
That's all there is to it. Every once in a while, we run across one that just aged out, that's blown blue smoke going down the road like a fogger, mosquito fogger, and it's time to replace the motor.
Yeah, and those come with symptoms. People, it's, I mean, it's not like just one day it's running and one day it's not. Most of the time people have...
Okay, time to take a break.
Okay. All righty. And the lines are wide open, 602-508-0960, and we'll be back right after this. Welcome back, everybody. 23 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. Sitting here next to me is Andy, my daughter, and Alan, my son, and all three of us work at the same repair shop in Tempe. And we've been talking on radio since 1988 about car and car repair issues. And if you'd like to join us, you can. We're going to go to Mike and Wayne first. But when, but first, let me just tell you about another shop here in town that's a rock star, and that's Action Auto Repair up at I-17 in Deer Valley. I've known Tom since he opened in 1983. He knows the difference between right and wrong. He has really good technicians. He like the rest of us, are real interested in the ASE certifications to tell you what kind of technician you have, and a master technician has passed all 8 automotive tests, and he has more than a few of those. So if you live anywhere near I-17 in Deer Valley, then Action Auto Repair is a good place that you might want to have an oil change done and see what it's like. Let's go to Mike. Mike, good morning. How can we help you?
Hey, good morning. Thanks for taking my call, Mike. So I'm looking for a vehicle for my wife. She's driving currently a 2004 Toyota Camry, but it's really too low. When she drives in my vehicle, which is a 2005 Nissan Frontier pickup, it's definitely higher. Gas mileage is not important. Anywhere, I'll probably buy one either brand new or something with 30,000 miles or so. My wife is about 5 foot tall, so she wants that visibility, something in an SUV with a truck chassis for safety, and of course we'll get lots of airbags. Do you have any recommendations?
No, I mean, there's, how many makes and models do we have in our database right now? 600?
Yeah, oh, more than that. But I think Toyota and Hondas are good product lines, but...
Yeah, I think what needs to happen is you need to narrow it down for us. You need to give us 3 choices or 4 choices. And
I'll give you... Yeah.
And is there ones you're looking at or she likes?
Well, I was thinking we used to own a Grand Cherokee, okay. And my wife loved it. Nissan Pathfinder. Those are 2 that I can think of.
I would pick the Pathfinder over the...
And what's the Toyota comparable to the Pathfinder and the
4Runner?
4Runner.
Yeah.
That would be my top choice.
Yeah.
I think I agreed with the Toyota, the 4Runner, a 1-owner used Toyota. Are you buying her a new one or a used one?
Either way, it doesn't matter.
Okay. Well,
I'm just trying to get the best value.
I mean, and I don't know how long if you keep them for a long time, but resale value, the 4Runners are great. I mean,
it'll probably be our last car.
Okay.
Her.
Okay, I think she needs to go drive the Grand Cherokee, the Nissan Pathfinder, and then go in and look at the Explorer on the Ford side. Because what are you driving, Andy?
Yeah, I have an Explorer,
and Mom has an Explorer.
Uh-huh.
So even though I'm not a Ford guy, my daughter and my wife both have Explorers, which compete nicely with the 4Runner and the Pathfinder.
Yeah,
and so our family has two and the. The 2 women, again.
I love my Explorer. I really like it. The space and everything like that is really good.
And the
now
view.
The Pathfinder versus the Grand Cherokee, why would you pick that over that?
I don't like the Jeep product as much, in Grand Cherokees and stuff, but that's just more of a personal thing than.
I think.
Based on reliability?
Well, the reliability has to do with the person with their foot on the gas. So and who does all that kind of stuff? I think from a family point of view, and I've never really been a Ford guy. So the fact that my daughter's driving a Ford and my wife's driving a Ford is real. I mean, that's good enough to divorce, you know, her for driving a Ford. But the idea is that we seem to find that the Ford in the classification you're talking about. The Ford and the Toyota would be the number 1 and number 2 of the SUV line that we're talking about.
Oh, okay.
And I think
so we'll have
anybody
to take a test drive.
Agree. Both,
yeah.
Both of those.
And I think your wife's going to like one of them more than the other because one of them has better visibility. One of them, the seats fit her better. She likes the interior. She likes the amenities, all that kind of stuff. And that's what we need is your wife involved in that kind of stuff.
The RAV4, too, is a smaller version of like a 4Runner, I would say. CRV, Honda CRV.
It doesn't have a truck chassis.
No, you want a full chassis. Yeah. When you're talking about that, you're talking about
that's
a full
correct.
Chassis.
I don't want a unibody.
Okay. Right. And why not?
Okay.
Why not, though?
I'm worried for crash reliability.
Okay. Well, I want you to know that none of us, I mean, there is a perception that you're safer, but you know in a unibody car, it's designed to crush around you like a big trash can. And really and truly, there is no science that says that a full-framed... Now, if you take my one-ton truck that's got a full frame and you hit something stupid head-on, obviously I win. But there is no science that says that the unibody, more people die in the unibody, or more people have crashes in the unibody, or whatever, than the full-frame vehicles. The full-frame vehicles, the downside to that is they ride like lumber trucks compared to some of the...
Okay.
Some of the ones that don't have full frames. So the
okay.
Yeah, there's normally going to be some discernible ride difference. Okay.
I did not know that. I'm glad I called.
Yeah. No. Okay, that's why it's called a truck frame.
Full chassis were better. So good.
They're perceived as being better and stronger. But I mean, I love my wife and I love my daughter, and neither one of them has a full frame. So. I'm okay. But anyway, thank you very much. And Wayne, if you'd stay right there for me, please, I'll take you. I got to take a break in about 45 seconds. We have open lines available. Wayne's first, but that's 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Sitting here with me is Andy and Alan, my daughter and my son. And like I said, we've been in the business for a very, very long time. We service lots of cars. And you oftentimes, it's a good idea to ask the guy who's going to be working on your car what him or his wife drives, because typically they're going to pick a vehicle that stands up well to miles, that doesn't need a lot of maintenance, and doesn't have a huge amount of pattern failures. So we have cars out there that have head gasket problems, and they happen all the time to this particular car, this particular engine. Those are the kinds of things that you want to avoid. But a seasoned repair shop can help you with that. 602-508-0960. Well, welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. Actually, 11 o'clock. Never mind. I'm looking at the wrong clock. And just like we promised, we're going to go straight to Wayne. Wayne, thank you for holding. How can I help you?
Well, if you have time, I have two questions. But the first one, I think, is a tire problem. 2011 Dodge Grand Caravan. I had damaged tire screw in it. They said wasn't repairable, so I replaced the two back wheels at about 4:30 seconds with two new DF Goodrich tires, and then I took it to Bullhead City, going up 93, and I'm feeling this faint but discernible. You know how it feels when you got a trailer and it's fishtailing? That's the way it feels with the seat. Slight, but, you know, this isn't right. And then I'm driving a little bit more. I'm back here in Phoenix, and if you go from the Diamond Lane on the 10, which is a left-hand curve onto the eastbound 60 at 60 miles an hour, all of a sudden, the analog brakes are coming on, and it's, you know, going to cut you back 15 miles an hour. And if you go east on the 60 to the transition to the 101 south, which is a right-hand curve, 60, 65 miles an hour, the analog brakes comes on, and it's going to slow you down 15 miles an hour. I'm saying, this is not right. Is this a tire problem? That's the only thing that's changed. What's going on?
I didn't know that analog brakes can apply themselves.
Well, I'm on the gas pedal, or at least I don't have my foot on the brake, and the analog brakes are coming on because it perceives, I guess, that one wheel is slipping or isn't gripping properly.
I don't know that we have anything on the car that monitors whether the tire's gripping the roadway. I mean, help me out here.
Well,
Andy, go ahead.
However, the computer reading the sensors, it's indicating something's not right.
The only thing
it'll slow the car down 15 miles an hour.
The only thing I can think of is if it's all-wheel drive and you replace two of the tires and not four.
Yeah, it's only two-wheel drive on this van.
Well, we may be monitoring the spin ratio of the speed of each one of the tires. And what happens is that if you apply the brakes and the brakes lock up the right rear tire, the computer sees that the tire is no longer rotating or rotating in a different way than the other three, and it will dump the pressure to that and then allow that tire to start spinning again. That's how automatic brakes, ABS brakes work. And so the computer's job is to dump the pressure if the tire locks up. So when you say that you're driving, I don't understand the relationship here. Stability control? This wouldn't be a stability control issue. This isn't where the computer thinks that. I don't know.
I'm not sure. I don't know.
It has only happened to me 3 or 4 times total. Happened once on 93 I know of, and then the other two I mentioned, and then I'm questioning, I'm thinking it's only the rear wheel brakes that are being applied by the computer, and it happens, you know, in a matter of a few seconds, so I haven't been.
Analog brakes, the first thing that happens with analog brakes is you apply the brakes and a wheel locks up, and then the computer dumps the pressure to that wheel, gets it rotating again, and then reapplies pressure. So what has to happen at the very beginning is brake application. You're telling us you're driving down the freeway, and then all of a sudden the car, somehow or another, the car begins to slow itself down, and I don't understand that. I've been wrong before, but I don't understand that. That's never been a situation that I've ever seen.
I've never seen it either. I can tell you that I did not have my foot on the brake pedal.
Okay.
Okay. I missed the first part. What was the year and make of the vehicle?
Analog Energize.
11 Dodge Caravan.
Oh, yeah.
And he replaced two tires because one wasn't repairable. He replaced two rear tires, and now he has this problem.
And
so he's not sure if it's related to the tires or not.
And the Caravan's a front-wheel drive, and the back tires don't have any drive axle to it. So the back tires, all we're going to do is monitor the speed, and it's going to be ABS monitored. And so we don't have any traction issues. We don't have any of that. And so,
is there any lights on the dash at all whatsoever when this happens?
The yellow analog brake light comes on when that occurs.
I wonder if he's got like an intermittent. I don't know why it would apply the brake. So it's intermittent if the signal for the wheel speed sensor is dropping out. And it's seeing, you know, it may be where it's monitored only, it's monitored as an assembly, not each individual wheel where it's, it wouldn't be.
What you're talking about is channels, 4-channel, 2-channel, stuff like that. So what we're thinking out loud here is that usually there's one channel that monitors the front brakes and then one does the back brakes. The yellow ABS light just means that I've lost sight of one of the wheels. That's all it means. The yellow, it says it's not red, it's yellow, it's just caution. I'm going to stop letting you use ABS. You're going to have conventional braking. You're not going to have anti-lock brakes anymore because the light's on. The light's yellow. It doesn't mean stop. But what puzzles us is the fact that you're losing speed during this period and you don't have your foot on the brake, and it's your perception that the vehicle's slowing the speed down because the computer's doing it, and that's the struggle that I'm having.
I wonder if there's any codes or anything stored.
Well, that's certainly a place to go. I think you just need to take it to a shop and describe to them what you have, and maybe even in writing so that you can tell the story completely. And most of us are going to go into the computer and say, hey, what's going on? And hopefully there'll be some historical data in there that we can gather up. But the real problem in the thing that I don't understand, and you're telling me something I've heard for the first time in my whole life, is that you have an ABS light come on, and then all of a sudden, for some reason or another, with no input from you, all of a sudden there's something slowing the car down dramatically. Now, the only thing I can think of is what happens if the ABS sensor was monitoring the right rear wheel and the wheel bearing was going bad, and the wheel bearing caused the tire to shake. The ABS would turn the light on because it lost the signal, and at the same time that wheel bearing is disintegrating and dragging the vehicle to a stop.
It's going to be something like that. Yeah. The problem is that this has happened four times over a period of how long? I mean, you would have think that that would be something that would get progressively worse.
1 week.
But,
yeah.
One week.
I had the tires changed last weekend.
Yeah, you know, if you take it into a shop, hopefully they're going to put it up on the rack and they're going to spin all four tires and they're going to wiggle top to bottom, 12 o'clock, 6 o'clock, to check the wheel bearings. They're going to look for any kind of heat damage caused by a wheel bearing that's going bad. But I just, that's all I can offer you. I'm sorry,
And Eddie just texted me. He said that the circumference of the tires may be different. Mm-hmm. Are we absolutely positively certain that both of those are the same size? Have you looked with your own two eyes?
The front and the back.
I'm talking about just the back.
The sidewalls show they're the same size.
The back ones are. They say that they're the same size.
Yes.
Okay, because we've seen a couple times where people come in at a 205/75 and a 205/70, and they just picked it off the shelf wrong and. It's going to be something. I think it's going to, if it just started, I would say it's going to be something with those tires, whether it be they nicked an ABS line or hit an ABS line or have, for whatever reason, have different circumferences or whatever. But
I would take it to a shop, back to the tire shop.
Yeah. All right. Well, good luck to you, Wayne. I'm sorry. That's the best we can do. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, William, you stay right there because we'll get to you right as quickly as we can. 1559. Got to write down my numbers. Welcome back, everybody. 45 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. We're going to go to the phones, just like we promised, and we're going to go with William. Thank you for holding through the break. How can I help you?
Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Always love hearing your show.
Thank you.
I've got a question that deals with, is it better to try to restore a classic car or rebuild it using more modern tools? Let me give you the story. My stepfather just gifted me a 1955 work truck, a Chevy, a 1959 Chevy Apache work truck, and a chassis, a full chassis with all of the panels, all of the trim, and everything else of a 1957 Chevy Bel Air. It doesn't have the original engine, but it has everything else original. These were the 57 was supposed to be his project car, and it sat in his barn for the last 30 years because he's never had the time to do it. And so the question that I have, Bel Air is my wife's favorite car, and I would love very much to be able to gift her a Chevy Bel Air. But the question I would be asking more so for it is, it's not all original. Would it be better? And I think I know the answer. It would probably be safer to have a modern suspension, a modern braking system, and everything else. But what is your take on that idea between trying to restore it fully versus rebuild it? And do you know any shops in town that would do that?
If you take that and put it back to stock, your bill's going to be 40-50, and I've not seen the car, so I'm just guessing here, 40-50-60,000 bucks. If you're going to modernize the car and change the suspension and put a fuel injected engine in it with a 5-speed transmission behind it and new air conditioning and all that stuff, you'll spend every bit of twice that much money. So it really depends on what you have right now and which is it better suited to do. These cars go in, huh?
And what's
wait,
your budget?
Wait a minute.
And what your budget is, yeah.
Yeah. We see these kinds of cars come in, and what we say to people is, let's just get it to start, run, and stop. That's what we want to do first. Start, run, and stop.
Right.
And then get some plates on it, and you drive it, and then you can make up your mind what you want to do. But start, run, and stop. And we've seen him. We've done cars, and so has Blackwell. Blackwell up north, he's done the same thing. We've had cars in that haven't. Well, Wayne's truck, his 55 Chevy pickup truck, it hadn't run for 10 years, and I'm driving that on a regular basis now. So, and it's a 55 Chevy pickup truck with a 6-cylinder, and I just put a carburetor on it the other day. So
right.
It really just depends. You're going to spend a lot of money modernizing that thing with fuel injection and ABS and a transmission and air conditioning and all that kind of stuff and everything underneath the hood. You'd be better off to sell those nice vehicles you've got and to buy a $70,000 or $80,000 Bel Air. That's what you'd be better off.
I tell my customers, like he said, you know, start, run, stop. And then I tell them, put a notepad on the seat with a pen. And as you're driving these things on Sunday, I got a rattle in the dash. The glove box falls open, and figure it out and see how often you're driving it. I mean, you'd hate to put, you know, $100,000 in a car that you find that you don't have the time to drive, or your wife doesn't enjoy driving, or something like that. But I'd definitely get it up and running, start, run, stop, and then work forward from there to see if you want to dump a bunch more money into it.
And these,
okay, I really appreciate it.
Yeah, the three you talked about, the 55 pickup, the 59 Apache, and the 57 Bel Air, those all probably have V8s in them. They have points and condenser ignition. They have a quarter jet carburetor on them. All that stuff is readily available.
You mentioned the 55 that you have. That 59 actually was mine, and I gave it to my stepdad. It's got the straight six oil bath.
Yeah.
Carburetor on it.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Yeah. That's why I'm just wondering, is it worth the cost, even on the cheap, to try to modernize it enough to make it a little bit safer on the road, versus just trying to do the let me buy all the old parts and restore it.
Okay. On your 59 Apaches, like my 55 Chevy pickup truck, the top speed of that thing with 456 gears in it is about 55 miles an hour, wide open throttle. Okay?
Yes, and it's screaming down the freeway.
And it's screaming down the freeway, yeah. And so I'm not going to change the rear end, because all I want is a car for me and my wife to go 5 miles to the steakhouse. You know, and we have to be on the freeway for a little bit of that. The windows roll up good. I just had the seats reupholstered. I had it painted. Everything, but I had to put a carburetor on it. But at this particular point, I have no intention of putting a V8 in there and where it burns the tires with a 456 gear, because I got to get rid of that first. So, I just take one of them, and I'd go after the Bel Air first.
Get it up and running as it is now, and then kind of fine tune what you want to change about it.
Yep. Yeah. Let's see how well it does on its own right now before you start modernizing it.
All right.
Okay.
Well, I'm in Peoria, so do you guys recommend anybody out here?
Well, you're going to wait forever for Tom Blackwell, but he's one of the guys that does this. But last time I talked to him, he said he was like 2 years behind.
You need to find somebody that, is really good with the old, the old car.
Right. Kurtz. Okay. Appreciate your time, guys. Have a great day.
Wait. Kurtz is a good guy. You're right.
He could probably do,
get him on the road.
Stuff, things like that.
Yeah. Kurtz can get him to start, run, and stop. That's no problem. Blackwell takes that car and puts in the big V8s and the 8-speed transmissions and the air conditioning and stuff. There's a big difference between the two guys. But Kurtz could pull this off. So could Action Auto. There's a lot of guys on my website, marksalem.com, that can take these old cars and get them to start, run, and stop. And that's really what you're looking at. Okay.
I appreciate it, Mark. Thank you.
Terry, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hi there, Mark. I want to talk about four-wheel drive systems.
Okay.
So I got a 2003 Ford Expedition. Believe it or not, the stupid thing, the actuators are not engaged when you have vacuum on, which means when vacuum fails or begins to fail, it fails into four-wheel drive or partial four-wheel drive. So that aside, that just seems incredible to me that something fails like that, designed that way. I'm going to have to buy a new SUV sometime in the near future, and I just wanted to know who has a really good four-wheel drive system, or who has the best, if anybody. And question number two is, can you still get manual locking hubs?
Manual locking hubs.
I mean, why would you want them?
I don't.
Because they're reliable. They don't fail the way my automatic locking hubs have. I got an 85 Chevy pickups and never failed on the hubs at all because, I get out and I turn them. That's why I want them.
What is automatic locking hubs? You see, when we're in four wheel or two wheel drive, we're not even spinning the front drive shaft. Well, I mean, we're not powering the front drive shaft. So what happens is when you have no hubs on the front, we start spinning the front drive shaft, which spins the differential, which is attached to the tires. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I'm not quite sure about automatic front locking hubs. I'm not sure what those are.
Or manual. You want manual locking hubs?
Yes, I want manual locking hubs.
I don't know any trucks that have manual locking hubs anymore.
No, they don't. I don't know any.
I don't know any. I know that they can be they can be swapped out. I know, like the late model Dodges, they make a hub kit, a freewheel hub kit with a thing, but they're big money. I want to say it's $3,500, but I don't know. I don't see enough problems with four wheel drives, because most people who have four wheel drives don't use four wheel drive for what they're intended for. So I don't see a ton of four wheel drive failures or problems or issues like that. So I don't really know the answer to that question.
In the truck that you have right now, it's got two high and two low, and four high and four low, and neutral, is something like that?
The 2003 Expedition has two high and two low, and of course four high.
Okay.
So it's got automatic hubs. I stick it in two high, and the hubs engage based on vacuum. Vacuum controls the actuators on the hub. And it fails in the four-wheel drive, which I think is really stupid. It should fail into two-wheel drive.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just the other part of my question was, do you know who's the best four-wheel drive, the more bulletproof four-wheel drive system available right now?
Okay, let me change your question.
I do use it.
Okay, let me change your question. Tell me the biggest piece of crap out there in four-wheel drive, and the answer is we don't know. I mean, it's Dana stuff. So there's Dana stuff on Fords and Chevys and Chryslers, and there's the running gear, the differentials, and the transfer cases and stuff like that. You can just take your pick from a mainstream truck out there, and it's all good. We're not seeing problems with those.
The only thing I can tell you is maybe stay away from the GM, because it's an IFS, independent front suspension. So you've got the CV axles, which is a weak link, whereas, you know, the Ford and the Dodge have the straight axle. That's about all I can tell you. But I don't see a lot of four-wheel drive issues, period. Unless it's the transfer case engager mechanism, stuff like that, or it won't come out or won't go into four-wheel drive. But other than that, I don't really see it.
And there's a lot of right. There's guys who are going to say, well, with the independent fronts, and Alan's right, we do lots of work on the front end because of the axles and the boots. We have problems with those, and those are maintenance items that a lot of other four-wheel drives don't have. But with an independent front suspension, you get a much better ride than two straight axles on the front and the back, and you're not likely to find too many of them newer in the last 5 years where you're going to have a straight axle front end. And so you probably can look around and drive what you want, but as far as trying to pick up a Chevy, a Ford, a Dodge, a Toyota, all the running gear is good. We don't spend a lot of time fixing the running gear, except for stupid people that get stuck and then throw them into drive at 4,000 RPM trying to jump through the canal. And those are the kinds of things that we usually deal with. But that's about it. As far as you can talk to Tom Blackwell over at Blackwell Automotive and talk to him about that. He may have some different ideas, but Tom typically takes an older vehicle and updates it with new air conditioning and fuel-injected motor and a 5, 6, 7, 8-speed transmission and brings it together, but it still has the ambiance and the look of a 1970 Chevelle, but it's got a powertrain in it from a Corvette. So that's kind of what he does. And he's going to charge you as much as your first house was. So however much money you spent on your first house, he's going to charge you that too. So, all righty, good luck, Terry. Thank you very much. What it comes down to it is Auto Dynamics in Sun City. We haven't talked about him, but Chuck's been in business since 1982. He does a good job. Chuck is somebody who really makes sure his technicians understand that they take care of the customer first. And then Chuck and the technician themselves are not even in the food chain. So let's just fix their car. Let's just fix their car. And so he's a good guy. Chuck knows, and I've known Chuck since 1968. So I know that he knows the difference between right and wrong, and I know that he can explain it in not necessarily Christian terms of how he wants his technicians to fix cars, and in a good way, they accommodate that as well. We talked about Tom Blackwell, and then we got Kurtz Automotive up at I-17 and Bell Road. Kurtz has been my hero many, many times. I've sent customers to him that had a problem. Either nobody could fix or the estimate was sky high, and Kurt, in most cases, came through with a suggested plan and a path that was quite different than what the customer had experienced so far. So those are the kinds of shops, and all those shops that we talked about are listed at marksalem.com. You can always go there and look. So today we did 12 calls, Gil. We did 12 callers altogether.
Oh, excellent.
And that was a good day. We also have all of our shows on the internet at marksalem.com. So if you missed a show, then you can go like last week, the week before, and actually you can go back 5 years and pick up shows, and we talk about cars, and we cut out all the commercials to make the show actually about an hour and a half as opposed to 2 hours that we would normally go. So thanks for spending your Saturday with me. Mm-hmm. My email address is mark@marksalem.com, mark@marksalem.com if you have any questions. If you also give me your phone number, I like to call you back because I'm going to have lots of questions and I really hate to type. And so it's just much easier. And I call from a blocked line as well. So if you send me an email and then you get a blocked number, it's probably going to be me, but if you don't answer, then I'm going to say to you, this is Mark Salem. I'll call you back in 10 minutes. I call from a blocked line. Would you please answer? And then we'll talk about your car. So it's mark@marksalem.com. Salem is spelled like the cigarette. Anyway, next Saturday we'll be here from 10 to noon, and we'll be talking about cars, and hope you join us.